My name is Andrew Davis. I'm the music director of Lyric Opera of Chicago, and today I'm going to speak to you about Richard Strauss's chamber opera, Ariadne auf Naxos. I say that Ariadne is a chamber opera because the fact is so surprising, coming from such a close artistic descendant of Richard Wagner. Since its invention in the late 16th century, opera had been getting relentlessly bigger. Mozart, Handel, and Haydn wrote chamber operas, typically for half a dozen winds, a half dozen brass, and perhaps a dozen or so string players, with a timpanist thrown in to go boom at the end. Beethoven usually doubled and occasionally tripled the winds and brass, and he increased the number of string players. But the true crazy man was Richard Wagner. Lohengrin is written for triple woodwinds and the now familiar brass complement of four horns, three trumpets, three trombones, and a tuba. Just to be heard, the number of string players had to be increased, and that was before Wagner threw in cymbal, triangle, tambourine, harp, and an organ. By the Ring of the Nibelungen, Wagner was up to quadruple winds and brass, except there were eight horns and six harps. Mahler and Strauss went even further. For his Eighth Symphony, Mahler took the ring orchestra and added more percussion. Die Frau Neuschatten, which Strauss was writing around the time of Ariadne, uses an astonishing 103 instrumentalists. Why assemble these massive orchestras? You might think it was all about composers' egos. Handel, Haydn, and Mozart were working at a time when composers were treated like glorified servants. It was Beethoven and Liszt who invented the superstar performer, and along the way were able to demand, instead of plead for, what they needed. Wagner had a king backing him, even if he was daft, King Ludwig, not Wagner. And there's a famous story about Strauss telling the brass to play louder at a rehearsal because he could still hear the singers. Ego might have been part of it, but after Hector Berlioz and Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov, audiences expected composers to astonish them, not just with beautiful tunes and interesting harmonies, but also with what we in the business call colour. Colour is the thing that makes a violin and a trumpet recognisably different even when playing the same note. The more instruments there are, the more possibilities for variation. But there was an even more basic reason for the growth in the size of orchestras. Early recordings, and I'm talking now about the beginning of the 20th century, were done by yelling into what looked like an ear trumpet. The sound moved a needle which pressed into a wax cylinder. The system was very, very low fidelity, and you had to be very, very loud. To record an opera aria, violins were just too quiet, and that's why you hear brass bands on many of those early recordings. Thomas Edison was not born until 20 years after Beethoven died, but the problem faced by composers in the 19th century was not so different from the challenges of wax cylinder recording. Music is not of much use if the audience cannot hear it. Most of Mozart and Handel's operas were performed either in large rooms in a private palace or in tiny public theatres. The Theater auf der Wieden, which premiered Magic Flute, held between 500 and 800 seats. The Teatro Regio Ducale, the precursor to the present La Scala, was not that much bigger. Compare that to Lyric's Civic Opera House, which has almost 3,600 seats. In 1776, the carnival in Milan was more rumbunctious than usual. Merrymakers burned down the Teatro Regio, so the city had to build a new theatre, La Scala. Most of the major European opera houses were either rebuilt or remodeled between 1750 and 1875, usually intentionally, but always on a grander scale than the originals. Audiences were growing, so theatres had to get bigger, and that meant the performing ensembles needed to be bigger as well, except for Ariadne. By the time Richard Strauss came to opera, he had already made his mark in the musical world with his tone poems. He was 48 years old by the premiere of his first popular opera, Salome, based on Oscar Wilde's risque play of the same name. When Strauss set out to compose an opera based on the Greek tragedy of Electra, he engaged the Austrian poet Hugo von Hofmannsthal. Thus began a lifelong association that would produce another six operas over the next three decades. After the premiere of Electra, the duo decided to write a comedy. Hofmannsthal came from an aristocratic Austrian family, and his artistic aesthetic was often nostalgic and backward-looking. So for their first comedy, Hofmannsthal began by researching one of the greatest comedic playwrights of the 17th century, Molière. The resulting opera, Der Rosenkavalier, was an enormous success, in part because when the stage director quit, the important German director Max Reinhardt stepped in to rescue the situation. A decade later, Reinhardt would team up with Strauss and Hofmannsthal to found the Salzburg Festival. Ariadne was not meant to be an opera, at least not a complete one. As a thank you to Reinhardt for saving Rosenkavalier, Hofmannsthal decided to adapt a Molière play for performance in the Kleines Theater in Berlin. This was the theater that Reinhardt had founded and was running. While doing research for Rosenkavalier, Hofmannsthal had read Le Bourgeois Gentilhomme. That play ends with an elaborate, made-up ceremony in which the middle-class gentleman of the title is duped into letting his daughter marry a commoner whom he thinks is a Turkish prince. Here, Hofmannsthal thought, was a perfect opportunity to substitute a new 30-minute opera by Strauss to end the evening. The opera would dovetail into the play by acting as the musical entertainment which the bourgeois gentilhomme had prepared for his house guests. Molière's play also required incidental music, which Strauss could compose to replace the original music by Jean-Baptiste Lully. Kleines means little in German, and Reinhardt's theatre was just that, so the piece would be a chamber opera with, by Strauss's standards, a tiny orchestra. Tiny, but as it turned out, not tiny enough. The orchestra pit of the Kleines Theatre could not hold more than 30 players, and the Ariadne Orchestra uses 37. So Reinhardt directed the premiere on October the 25th, 1912, but at the larger Hoftheater in Stuttgart, not in his own little theatre. The reception at the premiere was chilly. The audience members who had expected to see a play were disturbed by the opera and by Hofmannsthal's rendering of Molière. The opera-loving audience members were bored to get a five-act play as a preface to a 30-minute opera. And King Karl of Württemberg, who was sponsoring the premiere, made matters worse by throwing a 45-minute reception between the acts. Nor was the piece easy to produce. Beside the 37-piece orchestra, it required the expense of a full company of actors to perform the play and a full opera troupe for Ariadne. Ariadne auf Naxos thus began life as exactly the confused and unintentional farce that would provide the subject for the later full-length opera.